Condon.
Ken Miller. Trent Condon. Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO. And now on 106.3 FM.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome in. Miller and Condon here on a Monday. It's Des Moines Sports Station 106.3 KXNO. Trent Condon and Ken Miller with you. We're going to talk sports for the next couple of hours and appreciate you spending some of that time here with us. Here's the BMW Des Moines guest list here today. We did have an addition late in the program, or late in the pregame, if you will, of the show. We're going to put Mike Palm up just with everything that went down in Vegas over the weekend, particularly when it came to the tie, potential of a tie in Sunday night football. But first of all, we'll start with Scott Dockerman. About the bottom of the hour, Doc will be in here. He's back from vacation. He will join us. I'll put a bow on the football program and move over to basketball. The Hawks, they are off until Thursday, when they will host Indiana. But Scott Dockerman up at 10:30. Mike Palm from Circus Sports. We'll get to him at about 10:50. Also get the liability. Who does Circa need tonight when it comes to the national championship game? I think everybody's got the line at 3 as we speak. Bama Bob, Trent, and I will talk about that national championship game at 11:05. And then Nick Olson from Cyclone Alert, part of the 24/7 Sports. He will join us at 11:30 or so. We'll recap Oklahoma State, Iowa State, a game that Cyclones look to have, well, maybe not well in hand, but certainly looking, trending in the right direction with about 10 minutes left in the basketball game, only to fall apart, I think, fair to say, in the final 10 minutes. And to be fair, we haven't seen that at all up until this past Saturday. And then Trent's play of the day. And if he doesn't have Georgie's on the wrong side, and away we go. How are you?
Oh, I don't know if I need to be listening to you after another week.
Really. And after a whole season, never mind.
More kicked off on Saturday with Montana State looking,
Tommy Mellott, to my defense, now he can't stop the run.
Right.
But he was leading his team down the field and got hurt in the first series, and then it was over at that point. But, I mean, North Dakota State was just out-physicaled him, Trent.
You bet against North Dakota State, yep. And now tonight you're betting against Alabama.
I am.
That has not been very profitable throughout the years.
No, the entire year has just been an unmitigated disaster, at least from my perspective. But we'll get into that game coming up. A crazy day in the NFL.
Oh, man.
Wild morning in the NFL. Spielman and Zimmer, Pace and Nagy, both out. Flores in Miami, which is the head. There's always one, right?
Mm-hmm.
That makes you go, wow, that surprises me. And that was, I mean, he was 8-1 in his last 9. Now, I get it. And you had that first September, October didn't go the Dolphins' way, but still, that's a bit of a surprise. We'll see what happens in Houston. Of course, Fangio got canned yesterday morning. We know there's an opening in Jacksonville. I hope there isn't in Vegas. Versace, I mean, what more does he need to do?
Mm-hmm.
The year that this franchise has had, and don't look now, they're in the playoffs. What a game. What a wild, wild weekend in football.
Last night was one of the most riveting. I had butterflies. I swear to God, I had butterflies. That doesn't happen anymore. You know what happens in this business. You become jaded.
Jaded, right.
Yeah, it just doesn't have those. And I was just on the edge of my seat, so entranced in that game and the decisions and the timeout and just everything and what a tie would mean. And we joked about it and people are firing bets at it and just on and on and on. See the guy that got it at 100-1.
Yes.
And he had, $10,000, I think, on it.
Trent, there were some huge decisions. That Daniel Carlson field goal as the clock expired was literally worth millions.
Yes.
Tens of millions of dollars. Had he missed, had they not attempted the field goal, this was a huge decision.
You saw after the game Austin Ekeler talking to a Raiders player?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I saw it this morning.
And it looked like, again, we don't know exactly, but it looked like Ekeler said, we're going to kneel it.
Yeah.
The guy said, yeah, and just the look on his face,
right.
Like, oh.
Well, about the time, look, I get it. Look, going for it, fourth and whatever it was on your own 18-yard line, that's the Staley decision. It's just, you know, stick the analytics book right where the sun doesn't shine. That was a terrible call. But the timeout, tackle Jacobs.
Right.
Take the right angle.
And they used the timeout to get their run defense out there, to get their best run-stopping defense out there, and they
But they took a linebacker off the field is why he's getting killed for that.
Right.
He said one thing and did the other. Murray went off the field. Not that he's the, you know, the best run stopper, but they, instead of having a linebacker, they put a safety in the hole, and we saw the result as Jacob was able to get the 10 yards into field goal position. What were you hoping for?
A tie just for the storyline.
yeah.
Just because it would have been so crazy and it would have been remembered. And this game's still going to be remembered for a long time. I mean, this is one of the most epic final week games that we had Sunday Night Football in a long time. I mean, this is going to be remembered for a long time. And Herbert, time in and time out.
How good is he, right?
He was better on fourth down than he was any other down.
Absolutely was.
Some of those throws, just absolute rockets coming out of his arm.
And this isn't fourth and one, fourth and two.
Right.
This is 10-plus.
Yes. And just throw an absolute dime, time in and time out.
How about the touchdown? 20, how many yards? 21 yards? 22 yards? Whatever it was?
What was the Raiders defense doing on that play? That was another one. I mean, he just ran unabated. Mm-hmm. Nobody stepped in front. Nobody bumped him.
Kinda
nothing.
Like the Rams at the end of their game.
Oh, another one
Jesus.
There. It was one of those games that is going to be long remembered. For the story, I wanted the tie. But here's the other part. People killing the Raiders, even for attempting that field goal. Because it could have been blocked and run back. And I saw that and I thought, look at who they're going to play, though.
Yeah.
The difference between playing Cincinnati and Kansas City is stark. Mm-hmm. They got clubbed twice by this Kansas City team. Yeah, beating a team three times, more difficult.
Yeah.
I get all that. But you get the choice.
No, you want to play Cincinnati every single time.
And it's not even close. So for the consternation that was out there for that part of it, I didn't get it at all.
No, I didn't either.
And I thought I was, am I missing something?
No, you weren't missing anything.
A tie, you play Kansas City.
Yeah.
A win, you play Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy decision.
You play the first game on a Saturday, the finale on Sunday. You don't want to go to Arrowhead Stadium.
No.
I mean, I still think Cincinnati will beat them, but I'm, as you said, they didn't even put up a fight in the first two games against the Chiefs this year. What a wild, wild weekend of the NFL. My gosh, if the playoffs come anywhere close to this, how good are we? Do we as fans have it?
I haven't looked at weather, but I have looked at the point spread and the numbers. How about Cincinnati against Vegas? 49.5 is the total. I mean, doesn't that thing seem destined for 38,
35? It does.
Now, at Cincinnati, it could be freezing cold, and it might not be that kind of game. But on the surface here, that was my first bet that I looked at right away. I'm playing the total, and I'm not a total player normally. That one jumped right off the page to me. What a fun weekend we got set up. We got our first ever Monday Night Football playoff game. How incredible that's going to be. You get the Cardinals and the Rams, and you mentioned the Rams up 17-0. All right.
Now, they were home free.
McVay doesn't have to worry about this. All right. His old protege's got his number. Doesn't have to worry about that. And what happens? Debo Samuel. That dude. Hand him the ball. He gets 7. Throw him the ball. He gets 55.
Trent, he's a Swiss Army knife. The guy can do everything. Got to give Jimmy G credit for gutting it out and playing the way that he did.
Because he looked awful early.
He did. And he's got torn ligaments in his thumb on his throwing hand. And he threw some darts at the end of that football game, man. He really did. Oh, my gosh. What a fun, fun weekend of football.
Get the Steelers in.
Yeah, that hurt.
It's a good story, though.
It is. I like the story. I just had a bet on the under. And, you know, I got my money's worth of nothing else.
Yes, you did.
Took into overtime before it was decided, as I had a strong opinion on Pittsburgh not covering 8.5 or not going over 8.5 wins this year. But the story, 100%. Totally agree. Ben Roethlisberger, one more time. I'm all for it.
49ers, Cowboys getting that game again. I mean, that's a game of my youth. 90s game.
Oh,
that was
gosh,
just
that's those a great point.
Back and forth. And the guys that were jumping teams going back and forth.
Candlestick Park Original Cowboys Stadium. Oh, geez. They did play some thrillers, didn't they?
That's a Jersey game.
Yes, it is. How many times, as you think back to those games in the 90s, well, this is a real Super Bowl.
Oh, absolutely.
Every single time, right?
Right, yeah. And you got Deion going back and forth between the two teams.
Switching teams.
He wasn't alone.
Haley.
Charles Haley, did the exact same thing. And just those games were so epic. And it's crazy to think that this will be the first time we've seen it since, 1995, I think I saw.
Is that a fact?
Last time these two teams played in the playoffs. How good that's going to be. Again, a Jersey game, middle of the afternoon on Sunday, just absolutely perfect. 6 games, wild card weekend. Mm. And this leads to tonight, the national championship game.
The penultimate Monday of football.
There's no buzz. There's no...
Yeah, I know.
You have to find a better way, even during bowl season, and as fun as we had during bowl
season.
Here's
my question, Trent, to you. Why are they married to Monday? What if they played this on Thursday night this week?
Right. Push it back a little
bit.
Push it back.
You're okay. You get away from the weekend of the NFL. Mm-hmm.
And you kick it off. And you get some build-up.
You build up to it because you're not building up on Sundays. You're not getting anything.
No.
Why are they married to Monday? What's the magic formula that, you know, this makes more sense to play on Monday than Thursday? Why?
I think it's a really good point. And just thinking of it, and the wheels are turning in my mind, why not? Because here,
what is
even
prime
today,
time? What's TV? I mean, it's ESPN.
Right. So what do they have on Thursday?
What are they going up
against?
Basketball. They're going to win anyways.
Right. So with that, you put it on Thursday. Today's Black Monday. Uh-huh. And nationally, yeah, we're a college market. We're different here. But nationally, what's
dominant?
We're also
Vikings in a Bears market.
Right. And that's what's going to be the conversation on a national scale. It's you flip on WEI. You flip on Fox Sports Radio. You flip on a national broadcast or a big local broadcast. Mm-hmm. And they're not talking. They're talking NFL.
Especially in NFL cities.
But you push that back to Thursday. Right. I like that idea a lot. I think it's something that needs to happen. But ultimately, you need to fix your playoff. You do.
Yeah.
You need to have some buzz. They lose going from, for my money, the best regular season in sport.
Mm-hmm.
College football has the best regular season and the worst playoff structure. And because of that, you lose so much momentum over the course of the month and a half, basically, to get to this point. Month plus, I guess, 5 weeks to get to this game.
Mm-hmm.
Something better has to be out there. It's a 12-team playoff. We know it.
Yeah.
And we'll find out. Is it today?
They're supposed to meet with the presidents today.
Okay.
And they were supposed to find, because they've been very tight-lipped. They met Saturday, met again yesterday.
And this is a group that likes to talk.
That's a great point.
There's a lot of loose lips out there.
So that makes you wonder, right?
Uh-huh. What's actually going on behind the scenes? Because everything I've heard from the Bruce Feldmans of the world, the national talking heads in college football, was ultimately we're not going to get the decision that we want. We're not going to hear that we're going to have this in place. It's going to be ready in 2 years. We're going to the 12-team playoff because every conference has what they want. And they're not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But with this happening, maybe I'm just hopeful more than anything and trying to connect dots that really aren't there. But
well, Kliavkov is all in on the playoff, and he's about really the only one who's come out and made his feelings known. We have an idea what some of the other conference commissioners were thinking, but that's it. It's, Trent, you got me thinking now.
You're right.
Why haven't we heard anything other than the fact, well, we're meeting again tomorrow. Come on.
Yeah.
There's not much meat on the bone.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Maybe we do get some news here today. All right, real quick on this. We'll get more to 11:30 or so with Nick Olson. Iowa State lost. It's not a surprise, but some of their big names have made it official. Mike Rose, Brock Purdy, etc. That they are moving on. And we'll come back and take advantage of that extra year that was available to them. But basketball, Trent, for 30 minutes on Saturday evening, I thought, you know what? Cyclones are going on the road and winning a game in the Big 12. And, and that's not easy to do because they have a double-digit lead in the second half. And then the Iowa State team that we've seen up until that point, especially in the last 10 minutes, they kind of got away with that, from that rather. It was layup after layup after layup for Oklahoma.
Gave up 47 in the second half, and you're right, just the way that it went. If a team's just shooting lights out, you got a hand in the face and guys are hitting shots, you kind of throw up your arms and say, okay, so be it.
Right. Yep.
But not like that.
Mm-mm.
That is not what we anticipated at all. We talked about defense travels, and it's going to be there every single time.
And for 30 minutes, it did travel.
It was, yeah. And, oh, man, what was going on with that point spread? How dumb is Vegas?
Right.
Well, ultimately, they got that one right. But just the way that played out in the fashion that it was has to be pretty concerning, I think, that
it went that way.
In a game where you shot the ball well, actually.
They did.
They hit threes.
Right, 47% from three.
In a game like that, you have the lead. You're up double digits.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just dissipates in a blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
It's a game. It's one game out of 18 that you're going to play in the conference. But I think there are some concerns that pop up about that, that the defense can you put your finger on one thing, though? That was the problem.
It was the layups that they got.
Right.
You know who it was? It was this kid. Cortez, the kid with the hair.
But how does that happen? How does this team play this good defensively and time in and time out against a lot of good guards?
You're right.
Suddenly,
it was Jacob Groves. It was the younger of the Groves late in the basketball game that was doing the damage. I mean, Tanner got his. He's tough to stop in the point. Gibson had a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
The flopping calls, the technical. I don't have a problem really with the warning. It just seemed like it was such a critical point. I mean, the game, you could say the game turned at that point.
It did, yeah. It felt that way.
That was the beginning of the end.
Right. And another call that doesn't go Iowa State's way, and I get it. I like that refs are doing this with the flop.
Yeah, because flopping is such a... you have to get it out of the game.
Yeah. That's something that needs to be cleaned up. We talked, of course, Friday about the leg kick.
Yep.
And this is another part of the game. Yep. Just make the game better. Flopping does not make the game better. Kicking your leg out does not make the game better. And I get it on that one, but you're right. It just... That was the point where it felt like everything came crashing down right after that. What can you do? Just go out and play.
Yeah.
And now they got a big opportunity tomorrow.
Ooh.
I mean, all the rough feelings
Kansas,
that you have.
Kansas, Texas this week, Trent.
Yes.
Kansas and Texas this week.
And find a way to get at least one in the win column. You're feeling great.
You have to split it. I totally agree with you. How about the Big 12 this week? Kansas goes on the road to Lubbock. Texas Tech picks them off. Texas, who'd been starting to look as though they're figuring out. Off they go to Stillwater. They got clobbered. Just a wild, wild weekend in the Big 12. A conference that's a little defense.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yeah. TCU led at the half against Baylor.
They did.
Now, there's two halves of the game, and the second half was what we anticipate out of Baylor. But TCU, that team's got a pulse. And that Miles kid, I love him. I mean, that dude is so, so good. Their point guard, and he does really everything
for him. I never watched
a
minute of that game.
He's really, really talented. But, you know, that's a tough out. You're trying to find where do those road victories come. Had an opportunity Saturday.
They had one.
Oklahoma State, K-State's playing hard. They had a bunch of guys that have been out the last couple of weeks. They had a big COVID pause.
That's true, they did.
And they haven't got wins, but they've been playing really, really hard. Weber, I think he's got a group. They're not very good. They're not very talented, but it's kind of his kind of team, if you will, at Kansas State. You going to go to the Octagon and get a win? Maybe. There's not a lot of them. And that's, I think, another thing that leads to the frustration of Saturday.
Because they were up double-digit leads in the final half, and they couldn't close the deal. Trent, this team was never going to be a two-seed.
Right.
Which, you know, we started to see when some of the first or the early brackets came out. This team was never going to be a two-seed. But they've got the four quad one wins in their pocket. You know, if you can somehow hang around and get a six, I still think six is one of the most underrated seeds in the tournament. The way that it shakes out, five or six to me is perfect. Preferably six over the five.
Absolutely,
six is my favorite seed. If you're not one of the elite teams in college basketball and you get in, obviously you don't want the 8, 9, 7, but six is just ideal because eventually you get to the three if it shakes out that way.
And a lot of times you'll get a team that was playing in Dayton, playing in one of the play-in games. A lot of times they come out of the 11 seed to get a couple of those.
That's
so
true.
Get an opportunity there. Now that, play it one way or the other. A team coming in short rest, making the travel wherever you're going to be playing, but I'm with you. That is, and I think that's a realistic goal.
I do too. But I still think they're a tournament team. What I saw on Saturday did nothing to change my opinion. Now, Kansas, if they get blown out, Texas, if Texas comes in into town and just wallops them, I'm not ready to go there yet. I think that this was, TJ's got their full attention in practice because for 30 minutes they looked like Iowa State this year. They looked like Iowa State, guarding their you-know-whats off, but it seemed like just Oklahoma just got to the basket at will in the final 10 minutes of the game. For the first time all season long, they didn't look like Iowa State. Something was off. Anyways, you know what was disappointing? Selfishly last night, I love Sunday night Big Ten basketball. Right?
Yeah.
I really do. Ohio State and Maryland was last night.
Wisconsin-Maryland.
Wisconsin-Maryland. Beg your pardon. Wisconsin-Maryland. Well, that proves I didn't see it. But I sure would have liked to.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
But you're not getting away from the NFL game, though, for
absolutely
that.
Absolutely not. With all that on the line last night, my gosh, the NFL. So good. All right, so let's
Sunday night basketball next week, but Iowa does play at 1.
And Iowa State, when do they play? The Texas game has been it was announced, too. What time's it?
The Iowa
Please
State.
Please be early in the afternoon.
It is. Let me find it here. I was just scrolling through. Saturday,
NFL starts at 3:30.
How about 1 o'clock?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, that's good.
Works. Perfect.
absolutely perfect.
Sports viewing God shining on
right.
Miller and Condon here. So that'll work. Your Bears, let's do that real quick.
Yeah.
And save a couple of minutes for the Vikings. Obviously, there's a ton of Vikings fans in our listening audience as well. No surprise Nagy went. I think there's an element of surprise that it was both of them. Ryan Pace was also shown the door.
Now, the other question becomes what happens with the team president, Ted Phillips?
Yeah, right.
Because
get to decide who is making the call?
Do you ever remember an NFL job that it's not just about the GM and the coach? There's been so much talk about the team president, if you will.
Not that far. It doesn't go that deep. Normally.
No. Uh-uh. And this is not just... There's one guy that's kind of a talking point, you know, where one writer, one talking head is, no, this is across Bears landscape. It's not just the GM. It's not just the coach. It goes so much deeper than that. Ownership's not changing. The McCaskies are not selling.
Nope.
George's going to be there. Virginia's going to be in the box. Mm-hmm. That's what it's going to be. That's not changing, but the president. And there's an easy job for it because he is a good businessman.
Yeah, just move him to business only.
Business only.
But then who's going to make the coaching and the GM hires?
Well, and then is it George McCaskey? Great. You know, that guy, you know, doesn't know his ass from his elbow. You don't want them as it pertains to football decisions. So that's what you get into. And it's incredibly frustrating when you know that there is a structure that just doesn't work, that you don't have enough football people there. So what can you do? You know, what can you do to restructure an organization that ultimately... You're not confident it's going to be able to make the right choice and make a choice that's competent. They brought in a CFL coach. Ken, you've told us the CFL is a different, it's not even this, it's like bringing in an arena league coach.
Mm-hmm, it is.
It's different football.
Yes. Those two leagues, CFL and AFL, they have a lot in common.
Closer maybe than the NFL.
They are.
And CFL is.
Uh-huh.
Yet they did that a couple of hires back.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I am. I don't have confidence that ultimately they're going to get this right.
Who's gonna make the Vikings hire? The Wilfs?
Yeah, that's a good point too. And that's also shows you the difference of the conversations that we've had. Because do you know the organizational structure of the Vikings?
I assume it's Wilfs, Spielman, Zimmer.
But is there a football guy at the top?
I don't know that.
But we know that with the Bears, and I think that's the only organization that we know that because of these conversations.
Well, Denver had one, Joe Ellis.
Uh-huh, right, yep.
But he's hands-off this time because he's when the ownership changes there, he's out the door. No, it's a fair point. We'll have to, I know we have Cappy Wednesday, but we should try and do some Vikings or Bears tomorrow.
I want to throw this at you. So, Brian Flores, weird.
Uh-huh.
You're the Vikings and the Bears. You're bringing in Flores for an interview
without a minimum doubt,
right?
If he'll come.
Right.
Because he might have something better on the hook already.
What else would he have?
I don't know. There's a couple of... I think you have to take the Raiders off the table, right? I think you draw a line through the Raiders. So what is the best job open right now?
Best job open right now.
So we know that Jacksonville is open. We know that Denver is open. We know Chicago is open. We know Miami's open. We know Minnesota's open. What job do you want? Do you need to have a quarterback? If you've got three or four, are you taking into consideration who's playing quarterback before ultimately you take that job? Because Denver, I don't think has a quarterback. Although Drew Lock played really well,
right?
Boy, he teased the hell out of me.
Yes,
I came away from that game thinking, you know what? Give the kid another chance,
one more time.
Minnesota, Kirk Cousins, $35 million. What does he go to next year? $40 million.
Yep,
guaranteed. Bears have a young quarterback.
And that's
Miami
how you win.
Has Tua. I know there's people that like him.
I'm not enamored.
Nor am I.
But do they ultimately go out and are they able to get Deshaun Watson?
Well, there was apparently a better chance that they would had Flores have been there.
Aha. That was another thing interesting reading today, that the relationship with Flores and Tua was a big reason for this.
Is that right?
About the structure, yeah. GM staying, Flores is gone, and some people said that relationship had gone sour, and that was one of the reasons that Flores was ultimately shown the door. So they might believe that Tua is the guy, and they're happy with it, and completion percentage is good. Got some young receivers. Yeah, I think the Miami job would probably be the one that I would say out of that group. I mean, they were, a 9-win team this year?
9-win team.
7-game win streak. Of course, a 7-game losing streak before it. But I guess Miami, Minnesota's a good organization.
No, it's a good job. Now, they got a lot of guys, a lot of free agents on both sides of the football.
Of all of this, though, the most surprising element was, for me, Spielman getting fired. Because I have a lot of respect for Spielman. In fact, I wouldn't mind the Bears making a phone call there to have him run the organization. He knows how to build a team. You know, this has been my complaint for Ryan Pace now for, what, 5 years? He's a good scout. He can go out there and he can find guys late in the draft and free agents. He's done a nice job of that. I just never thought he knew how to build an NFL football team, how to put the pieces together in the right way. Rick Spielman can do that. He can do that, I think, in a big-time way. I have a lot of respect for him, and that was my surprise. Again, I'm not a Vikings fan, so I'm not in it at the same level, but just the respect that I have for Spielman, I was surprised to see him shown the door. Zimmer, we knew it was happening. And did you see the shot of him and his son taking a picture as they were coming out onto the field?
No,
the final
is that
time?
Right?
Yeah, I saw that come across the Twitter timeline yesterday, knowing that ultimately
this is it.
It's going to be over.
Yeah, this was it. Yesterday,
pretty cool moment.
Meant nothing. All right, Scott Dockerman coming up. Mike Palm will head to Vegas. I'm anxious to find out the liability that would have swung, the millions of dollars that would have swung on the Daniel Carlson field goal or the kneel down just playing for the tie, whatever. Boy, that was entertaining as hell. Scott Dockerman next, Miller and Condon. Right now, though, Trent, you ready for this?
What do you got over
it's
there?
It's keyword time, dude.
Oh, all right.
Time for another $1,000 slam dunk. There's no texting. You go to kxno.com. kxno.com and enter the keyword fun. That's fun right now. kxno.com fun. Miller and Condon back with Scott Dockerman. It's Des Moines Sports Station 106.3.
Back to Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM.
Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back. Des Moines Sports Station 106.3 KXNO. Ken at KXNO.com. The keyword this hour is fun. KXNO.com and enter fun. That's the keyword in the 10 o'clock hour. Scott Dockerman, he joins the program back from vacation. Much deserved vacation as he pulled double duty in Orlando with the Clones and then the Hawks. And he joins us. Hello, Scott Dockerman. Happy New Year to you since the first time we speak in 2022. How are you, Doc?
I mean, these temperatures are a bit much, but other than that, I think we're just rolling along. Here we are. Hearing mid-January already.
Indeed. So we found out about Belton last week, found out about Moss last week. When's Tyler Linderbaum's decision going to be made official, whether he's going to depart for the NFL, as most feel that he would? Although I'm not sure it's the same number, the high number that we just all assumed was going to happen. It was like it was a foregone conclusion. Is there some uncertainty there, Doc? We got another TJ Hawkinson situation brewing. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I don't really know as far as like what day, you know, his declaration is coming out. Generally, they try to space those out. They've done that for a few years out of respect for one another, to where it's some if they're done in the same day that, you know, even the hours are spaced apart. So my guess is you'll find there'll be a couple of different declarations here pretty soon, whether they return or leave or, you know, transfer portal, of course, is completely different, but I would expect to know probably within the next few days. You know, he doesn't owe anybody anything. You know, that when he has a deadline, it's next Monday to make that decision. He's already a college graduate. You know, the one difference, as you mentioned, like with TJ Hawkinson, when you're a small town Iowa kid and you go to Iowa City and you experience all that Iowa City offers, it's a different entity than it is for people who aren't necessarily from the state of Iowa. And so I'm sure it's pretty difficult for him. But, you know, if it's a heart versus head decision, you got to make the head decision, which is, you know, he can make significantly more money leaving than in an NIL if he comes back.
Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer, certainly from this side, but tugging at the very least. You mentioned Dane Belton, his departure, the cash position. It is a new wrinkle to the Iowa defense. They've had couple of really talented guys back there, starting with Hooker, and now going to Belton. So is Aver Wampa the heir apparent to that spot? And if it isn't, who else would be running to run that cash position in your mind?
Yeah, that's a great question, Trent. And I think part of it is, I asked Phil Parker last summer, you know, who was kind of your, you know, it seems like Imani Hooker is the kind of the prototype for that. He actually said, if we would have had this with Desmond King, he would have been fantastic. And I'm like, well, yeah, you're right. That's pretty much what he's played in the NFL. I think Xavier and Wampa is probably, he's got a really good shot there. But I also think there's a few other players that could drift over there. I mean, you look at, they've got three quality cornerbacks with now with Riley Moss returning, and you got Jamari Harris, who played his best game and that against Kentucky. And then Terry Roberts will come back from an injury. And you kind of want to find a place for him to get on the field. And then, you know, in the back part, you've got Kayvon Merriweather. He could certainly play that position. You've got to replace Jack Kerner, but you also have Quinn Schulte, Cooper DeJean, Sebastian Castro was the backup cash this year. So they've got a lot of riches in that backfield. But I think kind of like the old fast tracks at like Disney, you know, Xavier is certainly in that fast track lane. He's going to find a place to get on the field right away, and the fact that he's enrolling this month will help him get more acclimated than it would have if he would have just came in even in the summer. But even then, I still think he'd probably find his way to the field somehow.
Doc, trying to take the pulse of the fan base, and maybe, I mean, you might not agree, but it just seems like I get the sense that Hawkeye Nation, that the 10-win season is almost hollow. That there's just, they won double-digit games, but I mean, I think if you go back in the beginning of August, everybody would have signed for a 10-win season. Was it the fact that they lost to Michigan in the Big Ten championship and then lost their bowl game? The fact that they lost back-to-backers to end it? It just seems like a double-digit win is unsatisfactory to most.
I don't know about that. I think that this has been a real successful season for Iowa. When you look at the talent level, it, you know, frankly, to have that kind of offense and squeeze 10 wins out of that is something remarkable. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had an elite level defense. I think in some ways what you're looking at is, you know, the climb up to 6 wins, to have that, you know, 4-5 game and, or 3-4, frankly, against Penn State, and to win that game, that was kind of the pinnacle of the season. I think really, I would not suggest there's any apathy there at all, but I think that maybe if there's a level of discontent, it's probably more with the offense and just not feeling like the offense can go out and build that kind of excitement that sometimes you want or need from your football team. But I wouldn't say that it's been a ho-hum type of season. And I kind of looked at it going into that game against Kentucky, frankly, that in other years, a bowl win was necessary to kind of put a statement on that season, like, you know, beating Boston College, beating USC, you know, or Mississippi State, or, you know, going way back, there were others. This wasn't that type of game. I thought that 10 wins, hey, that's a pretty good year for this Iowa team. And granted, you know, there are other teams that would have loved to have had 10 wins. We're expected to have 10 wins that are in the region, no less.
Right.
No doubt about it. Doc, with that, you know, in the offseason, we always hear these stories. I remember when Parker and the defensive staff went and talked to Georgia and hung out with them and saw what they did. And one of the biggest things that came out of that is the rotation and using 6, 7, 8 guys along the defensive line. And we've seen what a coup that has been for the Iowa defense. So you get a phone call. Brian Ferentz says, Scott Dochterman, who should I go talk to? What offensive staff, offensive system that would make sense for Iowa would you say go there, learn some things, take some things away to help out this offense?
No question. It's not in the college football realm. It's in the pros. And I'd have him go talk to San Francisco and talk to Kyle Shanahan. Now, you don't want to have their type of, you know, the play calling is so long and unwieldy it wouldn't work at this level. But the fact is that they run a zone-type run scheme like Iowa, but it's just much more effective because they use a lot more misdirection. And I really think that in Iowa's run scheme, the more I look at it, yes, there are issues. I think if you can get it to where you master it, it's really good. It's really effective. It's just sometimes when you have a young line, it's hard to master. But I think that the passing game is where that upgrade needs. And I think it's conceptual. And they don't necessarily need to go with any kind of air raid because that's not their style or philosophy. But I think if you could get a pro style, shakeup in the passing game, the route trees, the concepts, the timing, everything that way. I think that's what they need to do. And I would suggest either the 49ers or the Rams as being those types of templates because they do it so well. And as we saw yesterday with the 49ers in the second half, they were able to run the ball at will and against a really good team, against one of the best defensive players of all time. And Iowa likes to do that too. So I would definitely suggest San Francisco.
Scott Dochterman from The Athletic is our guest. Doc, I have to ask just the quarterback position. If you're hearing anything, do you anticipate that, you know, one, a Padilla or Petras might be headed elsewhere? Is the coaching staff, have you heard, are they actively pursuing any quarterback that may be out there in the transfer portal? What are you hearing about the quarterbacks both on the roster now and who, if any, may be coming?
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation that I know of. And I would say this. I do know Iowa has looked into the transfer portal. How much contact, how deep it's getting, you know, is it more cursory? Is it more, hey, just wanting to see what you're doing? And then if they say, not Iowa, okay, move on. Or, you know, I think there's a couple that they've talked to. But, you know, so much of it depends on who they've got on their roster. And right now, it is Spencer Petras and Alex Padilla going to be on it in the spring? And that's a question you would think, just speculating, that it's not going to be the case, that one of them is probably going to go. And my guess would be Alex Padilla. But that said, they haven't made that announcement yet. I'm sure that they're, you know, just watching Alex's Instagram. He seems to be, you know, putting up a lot of stuff from this past season. I think you can read the tea leaves either way. The one thing I do know is that there is a lot of faith in Joey Labus, the true freshman, that they really like this kid, and the defensive coaches swear by him, and they say a lot of good things about him. So if that's the case, let him at least compete, and maybe he's their answer. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he's the one. Or, you know, or they say, okay, Spencer's going into the spring as the starter, but you're going to have every opportunity. I think that's the fair thing to do. And as far as the transfer portal, I don't know. I do think that they've got to give it a fair shot. You just can't be the same way passing game-wise that you've been the last few years. That could be a very much improved Spencer Petras, or that could be a better, you know, or somebody else. But I think that is the area that has to improve, bar none, for this team to go from being a pretty good program to go to actually the Big Ten championship game to one that can maybe win it.
We got 1 minute left, Doc. Who do you like tonight? And why is college football married to having their championship on a Monday? No buzz coming out of the weekend. Put it on Thursday. You got 2 or 3 days to build up to it. Media days, don't get lost in the shuffle as they did this weekend. Who do you like, and why are they married to Monday to have the Natty?
Yeah, it's hard to go against Bama after the way they treated Georgia in that SEC championship. I thought Georgia would have won that game, but it didn't, and Bama's played really well, so I'll go with Bama on that one. You know, the Monday night thing, I mean, college football moves at a glacial pace, as we're going to see with the playoff.
Yeah.
I imagine it goes through 2026. They got to do something different. I mean, you know, the New Year's Eve thing was ridiculous. Yep. I mean, the ratings were poor for a really good product. They just need to shake the whole thing up, and it might take 4 or 5 years before that happens. It's like having your ice cube tray and no way to break up the ice cubes themselves.
Doc, we'll talk to you in a week. Thank you for what you do. What do you have this week at The Athletic? Anything you want to promote?
Yeah, I'm writing about the playoff and how ridiculous it is that they've had this little standoff, like the good, the bad, the ugly. And then, you know, I think I'll dip my toe in the basketball water later this week when we got Iowa, Indiana. So I'm looking forward to that, and talking to a few players that have decided to leave the Hawkeyes.
Good stuff. We'll see if you can work in moving that to a Thursday, because I think that's in the future. We shall see. Doc, thank you, as always. We'll talk to you in a week's time. Appreciate it, Scott Dochterman.
All right, have a wonderful week, guys.
You do the same. Scott Dochterman from The Athletic. 10:45, off to Vegas we shall go when we come back. It's Miller and Condon on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-BETS-OFF.
Condon, welcome back. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Bama Bob, Trent, and I At 11:05 on the national championship game, the Nick Olsen from the 24/7 Sports Cyclone Alert. About 11:30, we'll recap Iowa State and take a look ahead to tomorrow. Iowa State, Kansas, ESPN Plus for that one. Off to Vegas we shall go. So many sports betting topics that we wanted to have Mike Palm on. We will get him on Friday as well to preview Wild Card Weekend. But Mike, such a crazy weekend in Vegas, and I got such a kick out of watching Derek Stevens, who owns Circa, celebrating with the people that just took millions of dollars of his money. That was outstanding. So glad somebody caught that and put it on Twitter. And all those Circa survivors survived to the bitter end and split the big prize. How are you?
Yeah, we're great. What a sweat the whole weekend was, starting with the Chiefs-Broncos game for two of the five remaining survivors on Saturday, and then all the craziness of yesterday, starting with the Colts losing at Indianapolis, which set up all these wild scenarios for that final game of the season, which I guess we could probably talk about for a month.
Oh, really? That game was just absolutely incredible. So you had the five people that were remaining in Circa Survivor. You had people that were hedging, others that decided not to. Ultimately, did you guys take all the hedging bets, or did they go to other properties to try to get extra money down?
So Billy Chip is from Florida, who was on the Chiefs on Saturday, did not hedge at all. In fact, he asked us for an alternate line, Chiefs minus 20.5, and we gave it to him, and he bet it. That didn't work out so well,
no.
But he didn't believe in hedging, not at all, and he thought it was a bad juju to go against your own bet. He had saved the Chiefs all year for this spot, and he wasn't going to do it. He did make a money line parlay of the other players' picks yesterday, you know, which is a smart move, because if he loses that parlay, he increases his share of the $6 million. So he cashed that, because the remaining picks yesterday, Tennessee, Tampa Bay, and the Washington football team all won. So all five guys got there. They split $1.2 million, and then the two that had Kansas City and the one that had Tampa Bay shared three ways the $1 million bonus for using one of last year's Super Bowl teams in your final selection. So, I mean, when we said you got to go 20-0 and use one of those two teams the last week to get the $1 million bonus, I thought, boy, that's going to be tough. But three people actually did it. So two guys got $1.2 million, and three guys got $1.53 million.
Not a bad payout for a $1,000 contest.
Not.
Hey, one of those guys' names, his contest name was Syracuse Hawkeyes. Of course, that one popped. Any local connection? Do we got an Iowan that won here? Anything you can tell us about the entry Syracuse Hawkeyes?
You know, he was there yesterday, but I didn't get to meet him because I took the day off. We had our baby shower yesterday, so I wasn't at the casino. I'll see him on Friday, because that's when we do the payouts and give out the big checks and the awards and all that. So I'll try to find out on Friday afternoon anything more about this gentleman. I know he was dressed in orange, they said yesterday, so I'm sure he's probably a Syracuse grad. We'll find out what the Hawkeye connection meant.
Interesting. Mike Palm from Circa, of course, Circa in the state of Iowa. You can download the app at the App Store, Circa Sports. Mike, Daniel Carlson, boy, he sure seemingly did the properties a massive, massive favor by making that 47 or whatever it was yard field goal at the end of overtime yesterday. How much liability did Circa have? And do you have any idea how much liability there was, I guess, around the country? Because so many people had jumped on that tie, tied it up with props and huge paying props. Any idea what it saved Circa and what it saved the industry?
I don't know what it saved the industry. Remember, we took the tie bet, yes, no, the last 4 weeks of the year so that the survivors could hedge their pick. I can tell you it was close to seven figures for us in terms of what we would have lost. The swing on the game might have been seven figures. There was one, the fact that the Raiders, we lose the game to the Raiders because the people had the Raiders plus three. But one player had a six-teamer. I think it was $3,000, paid $200,000 with the last Chargers minus three. So we saved losing that. But the tie, you know, we start almost all these ties out, the yes at something like plus 175 to one. It varies a little bit. By the time this game kicked, it was down to 11.5 to one.
Really?
I believe when the Colts lost, we moved it to 35 to one. And they bet it down to 11.5 to one. It was absolutely amazing.
Jeez.
I mean, have you, outside of a Super Bowl, have you ever seen anything like that?
No, we haven't. And, boy, it sure looked like we were going to be on the short end of it there. I mean, when they got to the two-minute warning, I think we were a big dog, right? Because, you know, if they don't gain 15 yards on three running plays, the game's over. They didn't even have to. They could have taken a knee. And you can argue, what was Staley doing calling the timeout? Why did they risk getting the field goal blocked? Whole bunch of things. I think, though, if you understand the Raiders-Chargers rivalry, I think that if it was the final play of the game, the Raiders would have tried a 57-yarder with Carlson had they not any yards on third down. I really believe that.
Interesting. What an incredible spectacle. Well, we've got a national championship game tonight. Alabama, a three-point favorite seemingly everywhere right now. Do you think it stays at three? And who do you think you're going to need when the game kicks off just after 7 Central time?
You know, on all these football games of importance where there's a favorite of 3 points or less, it's funny because we need the favorite to win by one or two almost all the time to thread the needle, because what they do is they take the 3 points they lay the 3 points with the favorite, and then they take the money line on the dog in general, right? So, for example, we need Alabama plus three, but we need Georgia money line. I would say the last 6 to 7 weeks of the year, I saw this every week in different games with these betting patterns. So, you know, we opened the game a pick. They bet Georgia, they bet Georgia, they bet Georgia. We dropped it to 2.5 on Friday, went back up to 3 on Saturday. I think it stays 3 now. There's a very little decision on the total. It sits at 52.5. Not much of a decision for us. So ideally, we'd like to see Georgia Georgia win the game by 1 or 2 or even 3. But who knows? I mean, we're still, whatever we are here, 10 hours from kickoff, and many things can change until then. Although this is a pretty solid market because they've been betting it for the last 8 or 9 days.
Georgia 24-23. That's what you're going for right there. And get that victory. Hey, Mike, congratulations on the baby girl. Another one coming into the family. Saw your baby shower. And how about your host on Odds On, Amal? Coming in, just a bottle of water and right out the door. Good work out of him.
Nice.
I had vegan food there for him, too. And he paid off just one bottle of water. But I appreciate them all coming in.
Good stuff. Hey, Mike, we'll talk to you on Friday, okay? We'll preview Wild Card Weekend with you. But as busy as Vegas was, as crazy as it was in the sports betting world, we had to double dip you here today. So we're grateful you found time. Thank you, Mike Palm.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you Friday.
Yep, talk to you Friday. Mike Palm, Circus Sports. Oh, wow. Can you imagine the sweat on $1 million on the line?
How about the two guys that had the 49ers down 17-0?
Jesus. Unbelievable. Hour 2 coming up next. Bama Bob Trent and I will start with this national championship game. Miller and Condor on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.